Broadcasting live from beautiful, historic Marion, Ohio, it's Now with Scott Spears. Call Scott live on the air anytime at 740-383-9944. No topic is too big or too small. I'm your announcer, the man with the golden voice, Ted Williams. And now, here's your host, Scott Spears.
Thank you, man with the golden voice, Ted Williams. Scott Spears coming at you here on a Monday morning, January the 29th, 2024, 14 minutes past the hour, and you are tuned into the Now program, and this hour is a real touchstone because we have one of my favorite guests of all time on. Every time he's on, I think we learn something, and I think we learn something about ourselves, I think we learn something about our health, and I think we learn something about where we're going, and those are three very important things to learn about. You probably remember him best as the medical correspondent on the Today Show for so many years. He is a best-selling author many times over, and today we're going to talk about how to keep those New Year's resolutions and two illnesses that he's dealing with and the future that is right around the corner with those illnesses and how we can prevent one of them from happening, to be sure. What a pleasure it is, as it always is, to welcome to these microphones Dr. Art Uhlein. Dr. Uhlein, how are you?
Good morning, Scott. Never better.
Dr. Uhlein, let's start with your recent trip to Paris. What happened, and kind of take us through the lineage of the event.
Well, it was one of the best trips of a lifetime. My wife and I have been to Paris 20 times by actual count, and we've taken several of our grandchildren on some of those trips, so this was an opportunity for us to take the youngest grandchildren on their first major international trip, and it was spectacular. That's the only word for it. I'm 87 now. My wife is 84. We walked on the clock on my Fitbit 50 miles in 7 days in Paris with those grandkids. We had been advised ahead of time there'd be rain every day, not a drop of rain on the trip. We were well, we were energetic, we had a spectacular time. And then we got on the airplane, and my wife said, my throat's a little sore. I said, that's funny, mine is too. And by the time we landed in Los Angeles 12 hours later, we were both really sick and spent the next 8 days in bed, flat on our back, just really, really feeling down with what we can only assume, based on my medical background, based on everything that happened, was an infection with RSV, respiratory syncytiovirus. And that's one of the common viruses that goes around in the winter time. And I say I'm guessing at it because we didn't go out and get blood tests. There was nothing to be gained. It would not have changed our treatment. We were not critically ill, although we just couldn't move, couldn't get out of bed to eat. And this went on for literally a total of 9 days. We spent 8 of those days in bed. I was out of the gym for 2.5 weeks. I just had no energy. And we got the infection in part because we didn't get the RSV immunizations. It was hectic. It was crazy. We got every single one of our COVID boosters. We're up to date with flu, with the pneumococcal vaccine, you name it. We've had every single one except RSV. And I blame myself for that. I was lazy, and to be really honest, I wasn't up to date on RSV. I did not appreciate what a serious illness this could be, particularly for older people and for infants. In fact, there are a significant number of deaths, several hundred deaths among children younger than 2 years every year. And there are thousands of hospitalizations among people over the age of 65. So it can only be described as a really dumb move on my part. And I just want to make people aware of the value and the importance of these immunizations. It's important to note they're not 100% effective for RSV. There are two shots available. One is 83% effective. One is 89%. But, boy, I would have given anything to avoid that. And just so you know, we're going to get immunized, even though we've had RSV, because the research shows that will boost our immunity against a reinfection next year. So my message to folks is that just do not take these viral infections for granted. Don't brush them off at mild illnesses, particularly if you're over the age of 50. Right now, the CDC has a warning out about measles. There are measles infections going on around the country because many parents have not immunized their children. And enough, our children are unimmunized now, so that we have lost the so-called herd immunity effect, which is if enough kids are immunized, you can't get an epidemic going. And people say, it's measles, so what? So I get some spots on my skin. No. In older people particularly, there can be some very serious complications. The virus can infect the lungs and the brain. You can get encephalitis, permanent brain damage. Ear infections are very common. So my message today is don't make the dumb mistake I made and brush off these immunizations. If you haven't reviewed your immunization schedule recently with your doctor, this is the time to do it. And just one thing, I learned something new this week. When I say this is the time to do it, it's winter time. And these infections spread more frequently in winter. And we used to think it was, well, you know, we're just because we're all crowded together. We spend more time indoors. So all I have to do is just avoid crowds. But Harvard researchers a year ago came up with another reason why all of these upper respiratory infections are more infectious during the winter. They discovered an immune response previously unknown that takes place inside the nose that actually fights off some of these viruses that are responsible for upper respiratory infections. And what they found is this nasal protective response is diminished by cold. Of course, if you're out in the cold, what's the first place it gets cold? Your skin and the inside of your nose. So we have two good explanations for why we must be more careful in the winter. And I urge people to stay up to date on your immunizations. Avoid crowds, wear masks, and please, just for my sake, cover your mouth and nose when you sneeze.
You know, that's very, very interesting. And when it comes to RSV, what kind of symptoms do you have that would help you delineate that it's not the flu, that it's not COVID, that it could be RSV?
Well, first of all, there's a very typical pattern for RSV, and having said that, I just need to remind people that none of us are typical, okay? There's a huge amount of variation. So the flu, the typical influenza, just hits like a bomb. You get a high fever, you're sick for 4 or 5 days, terrible muscle aches and pains, and then it's gone. With RSV, it comes on slowly, kind of like a cold, I mean, literally. We had a mild sore throat. We had runny nose. This is very typical during the first day or two. And then we started coughing. And as long as it stays in the trachea or above, it's limited to this aggravating cough, and we experience fantastic fatigue. If it goes down into the lungs, into the lower respiratory tissues, that's when it becomes dangerous for older people and for babies. kids in their teens, people in their 20s and 30s, typically brush this infection off. The other problem with RSV infections is it can last up to 2 weeks. It just went on forever. And that's not typical for most upper respiratory infections.
When we talk about anything to do with the lungs, there is always a big danger there. Are there more respiratory illnesses now, or are we just hearing about them now?
That is a really good question. And I think that the number of known respiratory illnesses has been stable for a few years. By the way, when I went to medical school, there was no such thing as RSV infection. The virus had not been identified. So I think things are pretty stable. We're just hearing more about it. And I think there's another factor, at least here in Los Angeles, the world is more crowded. You know, when I say avoid crowds, by the way, very simple measures you can take. You can wear a mask. You can avoid crowds. You can't avoid crowds in Los Angeles anymore. I don't know what it's like in Marion, Ohio, but this city is so jam-packed. Unless you stay in your car by yourself, and then you've got the crowded traffic. It's impossible to avoid crowds today.
You know, the crowd factor is interesting because anybody who just goes to the grocery store or who did any Christmas shopping in a department store or who goes out to a restaurant to eat, or who has a job where you work around four or five people, you would be subject to something, I would think. I don't know how you avoid this, because what I always hear from people is that, oh, the sickness is going around work. You know, it seems like everybody's sick. And at that point, what do you do?
It's a real problem, and I don't want to brush that off. If you got to go to work, you got to go to work, and clearly that increases your risk. My wife and I, number one, we wear a mask whenever we're going to be in a crowded place. I don't wear a mask when I'm walking down the street, and I have to chuckle because there are a lot of people in L.A. wearing masks when they're alone walking down the street. That just doesn't make sense. It's not necessary. But wear a mask and find shop at the less crowded times. We frequent a gym that this gym is 80 years old, and they don't have air conditioning or heating. They open the windows. So we've got a breeze blowing through our gym constantly. That minimizes the risk. But for many, many weeks, we were wearing a mask in our gym, even with the wind blowing through.
Mm. It's an interesting thing, and certainly this time of year, if somebody comes down with something or thinks they are coming down with something, how important is it to stay away from other people?
Well, until you know what's going on, I think it's the decent thing to do. It's, you know, we're all in this together. And if you don't want someone doing it to you, then you shouldn't put other people at risk. This is just common sense, common decency now. You know, there's a piece of me that says common decency flew the coop about 2-3 years ago in L.A. People here are just out of control. They're running stop signs. They're running red lights. They're rude. They cut you off. Common decency kind of helps at night when you're putting yourself to bed and you ask yourself, what kind of human being am I? I do that. Actually, I do that several times a day. What kind of human being am I right now? And sometimes I'm not the best I can be, and I try to be. I hate to sound Pollyannish, but I do it for selfish reasons. I feel better when I behave like a decent human being.
Hmm. Dr. Uline, something very interesting here. You have been going through some medical issues. that are personal, but you're going to share those with us to help us learn how to go through these, and also some great breakthroughs that have been made in this particular field. So I will let you handle what has happened, what have you been diagnosed with, and how is the treatment going?
Well, in the plain English language, I've been losing my mind. At the turn of the millennium, literally at the turn of the millennium, I lost my mind for the first time. Let me explain. My wife and I went to Paris to celebrate the millennium, and we were there at the Eiffel Tower along with 2 million other people. Bring in the millennium. We saw the first fireworks and the first light strobing on the Eiffel Tower, and we've returned 3 times on New Year's to greet the New Year there, and it was truly one of the most amazing trips of our life. We flew home. The next morning, I could not remember the trip to Paris. I did not remember we had been to Paris. And my wife noted that I kept asking the same questions over and over again. She would answer it, and I didn't remember the answer. Well, I was hospitalized. I thought I had a stroke. And it turns out I did not have a stroke. I was neurologically completely intact. And the diagnosis was made of transient global amnesia. Global means I lost my entire memory, and transient means, as the doctor said, he says, I have good news for you. You're going to get your memory back. And I said, oh, great. He said, I have some bad news for you. I said, what's that? He said, it's not all coming back. And indeed, most elements of that trip are gone. Just gone from my memory. I can kind of stir some shadows of them by watching the fireworks from the millennium on my computer. But I just lost my memory. He said, more good news. It rarely happens a second time. And in 2011, it happened to me a second time. I was hospitalized again. They thought I had a stroke. No stroke. And in 2017... I started having quite a different kind of amnesic episode. I would just lose a little bit of my memory. I'd kind of get this wave, and I'd be sitting in a chair, and it was like, ooh, what's happening? And I'd be somewhere else, and it was like, how did I get here? Where am I? I knew who I was, and these were transient episodes of partial amnesia. And they started occurring once or twice a week. I was diagnosed erroneously as having transient epileptic amnesia. One neurologist said, oh, these are due to minor epileptic episodes. Put me on medications that made me so sick I wanted to die. And one of the complications of one of the medicines was suicidal ideation. I actually started thinking about killing myself. Not because I was depressed. I would come in from a great day of skiing and think, God, what a wonderful day that was. Maybe I should kill myself now. Well, to make a long story short, an astute physician said, that's the medicine doing it. We stopped the medicine, and within 24 hours, the suicidal ideation disappeared. I'd never had another problem. And that neurologist said, you don't have epilepsy. These are episodes of migraine aura without headache. You are having something, there's a fancy name, it's called spreading cortical depolarization, but it means the brain loses its electrical charge, you kind of wipe out memory, and then the brain just repolarizes, and it all comes back. And this has gone on since 2017, twice a week, and it got to the point with no loss of permanent memory. And it got to the point where I was almost amused by them. By the way, I've had two such episodes when I'm driving a car. I can feel it's coming on, and I say to myself, you better pull the car over, get to the curb, just relax for 20 minutes, and it'll be over. And that's what happens. So 5 years this was going on, and last year I noticed something new. I lost some serious autobiographical memories. Someone would tell me something that I really should have remembered. I mean, something critically important, and it just wouldn't stick. I noticed that I couldn't recover some of the memories from my childhood or my college days. So my neurologist said, this is something different, sent me to another neurological group, Pacific Neurological Institute, where I got two different opinions. The first neurologist said, you have preclinical Alzheimer's disease. Like, what? That's like getting hit on the head with a baseball bat. What's that? Now, here's a doctor asking, what is preclinical Alzheimer's disease? Because what I didn't understand, and what most people don't understand, is that Alzheimer's disease, the cause of common cause of dementia in older people, actually starts 10 to 20 years before the symptoms appear. Their researchers have now found amyloid deposits in the brain, a stunning sign of Alzheimer's, 5, 10, 20 years before any symptoms are caused. But this was, you can imagine, very frightening to me. Other neurologists at the Institute said, no, that's not what you have. We're not 100% sure what you have. We think it's just age-related decline, but we know how to help you get it back. And I said, what do I need to take? And they said, you need to take stock of your life. What? They said, we've got a program that has been scientifically proven to restore brain function, to improve your memory, to improve your thinking, to improve your sleep. And if you're willing to do the work, we'll put you on it. I said, what's in the program? Exercise. Better nutrition, more sleep, stress management, cognitive challenge, you've got to work your brain really hard, and more social connections. And I said, come on, you guys got to be kidding me. Isn't there a drug for this? I swear, that's what I wanted to know. I've heard there's a drug. Yeah, there's a drug, and it doesn't work. If you want to improve your brain, which was not working well, by the way, they tested me, 6 hours of neuropsychiatric tests, and made a diagnosis of mild cognitive decline. In mild cognitive impairment, it's known as MCI or MCD, and it is, for many people, the first step on the path to dementia. Can you imagine how scared I was?
Mm.
I said, I signed up for the program. And for the last year, I've been doing massively more exercise. I have been eating a vastly different diet. No more processed foods, no sugar, lots of antioxidants and anti-inflammatory foods. Except for nights when I'm on your program, I'm getting a lot more sleep. I go to bed 2 hours earlier than I used to. I have decided that nothing, no stressful event is worth worrying about anymore if it's going to make my brain work less efficiently. I have challenged myself fantastically, cognitively speaking, and I'm actually, are you sitting down? I'm actually working on another book at the age of 87. And this is a book about this brain program. And the last thing is social connection. And, you know, just paying more attention to friends, being more connected. And there's a scientific reason behind why each of these things work. The research has shown that different functions operate in different parts of your brain. Your memory is in the hypothalamus, executive function is in the frontal lobes, emotional feelings are elsewhere. All of these things reside in different parts of your brain, and the more parts of your brain you use together at the same time, the more likely your brain is to develop new pathways to grow. And so I've been doing that, and to make a long story short, I apologize for the length of the story, I am at the top of my game for the last 5 years, Scott. It is unbelievable how well my brain is working. Now, I've got to be honest. My brain is not working as well as it did 20 years ago. But I can tell you that I have dramatically improved. The 87-year-old Art Uline is working a lot sharper than the 82-year-old Art Uline. And so the book I'm writing is about this program. And people say, what are you talking about? Exercise. How can exercise affect your brain? Well, for one thing, it affects your heart and blood flow. That means more oxygen to the brain. But for another, they've proven that exercise increases the amount of a chemical that is secreted in the brain. It's called BDNF, brain-derived neurotrophic factor. And that enhances the health of the brain. Nutrition is obvious. If you're poisoning your nerve cells with all this crap you eat, why would you expect your brain to work well? Sleep, obvious. I can't tell you how much better I feel after a night of 8 hours sleep than after a night of 6 hours. And social connection has it's brought me back into the mainstream of life. So I'm very excited about this, and I'm trying to spread the word. I've created a name for the book I'm working on. We're calling it Re-mentia, the opposite of dementia, right? Makes sense, doesn't it? And I'm hoping to have this thing done within a year, which reflects another issue that has been shown to promote lifespan and brain health, optimism. Simple things like optimism add to your expected lifespan. So stop looking for a drug, a magic drug, to solve all of your problems and get to work on a lifestyle program of your own. By the way, a similar program to this is being conducted now at the Mayo Clinic, at Cleveland Clinic, at major centers around the country. And the reason they're doing it is it works. The problem with the program is it's expensive and it's extremely time consuming. And I can tell your listeners, if you're not ready to do the work, this program doesn't work.
That is so fascinating. Now, so many people struggling with memory loss, if you are in the throes of dementia, or in the throes of Alzheimer's, can this help?
This is really a tough question, and it's made even more tough by some wild claims that are being made by some people trying to sell books, you know, the end of Alzheimer's. No, this is not the end of Alzheimer's, because there are genetic factors that go into Alzheimer's. There are other issues that make it almost impossible. I think most people are familiar with these new fantastically expensive drugs that are being promoted now because they remove amyloid from the brain. And I have bad news for you. removing amyloid from the brain isn't working. Okay? People do not reverse their Alzheimer's. So this focus must be on prevention. If you're approaching 50, or if you've got parents who are 50 or older, the issue, the answer, the key to this is prevention. Can it be prevented? Absolutely. Can it be mitigated slightly with the techniques I've just talked about? Yes, probably. Can it be reversed? I doubt it.
You know, Dr. Yulian, something that I have found interesting recently, and maybe it's because of the new year, but I think it was going on long before that, is that people want to change. A lot of people are dealing with illness, or they're getting older. I think we're all getting older at some point. They see their body changing. They see their health changing for the first time, becoming an issue. And we want to fix the problem. And a lot of people don't want to go down the pharmaceutical route. And I'm starting to hear terms again like castor oil and taking cold showers and making your own cough syrup and medicine. Is there anything to this?
Well, at least there's a placebo effect. Most of the things you're talking about don't have any real medical effects except for the placebo effect, which is real. If you believe something will work, there is the brain is magical. There's a 20% chance that it will have an effect. But when I talk about work, I'm talking about real work. I'm talking about exercise. I'm not talking about a homemade cough syrup. When I talk about nutrition, I'm not talking about just popping a vitamin, although I do pop vitamins now. I don't want to take any chances on the nutritional deficiency. So I'm actually taking 11 different supplements. I'm taking fish oil. I'm taking antioxidants. I'm taking a multivitamin. But there is no substitute for changing what I eat. So I've stopped drinking Diet Cokes. I've stopped drinking processed foods. I bought a whole smoked salmon the other day, cut it up into small pieces, and I eat fresh fish every day. I eat fresh fish more often. I go to bed earlier. I turn off the television set. I am working 2-3 hours a day at my computer. And by the way, if you ask me to name one of the worst things in the world you could do for your health, it's to sit continuously throughout the day. Do you know that office workers have a shorter lifespan than people who do not work in the office? And it's because they sit. And the research has shown that if you just got up every hour and walked around the house for 5 minutes and sat down, you could break the metabolic cycle. I actually do that now in my own life, and every 2 hours, I get up and walk around the block briskly. Walking can save your life. And by the way, you don't have to walk 10,000 steps every day. The research has shown that the life benefits, the reduction in mortality, begins at 2,000 steps a day. And for every 1,000 steps you add to your daily count, reduce your lifetime risk of premature death by 5%. But if you're not willing to do that work, then get out of here. You know, it's time to stop talking about this. I'm working on a possible program. We're going to do a test program and sign some people up and put them to a test. We're trying to see if right now all of the therapy is delivered live in person, and we're wondering, could we do this on the internet? And part of the plan is, if you don't do the work, we throw you out of the program. Because you'll say the program doesn't work when we know you're the problem. You didn't do the work.
You know what's interesting, Dr. Yulian? What I hear from a lot of people is they will say, I've already got something. I've got, you hear about cancer. You hear about congestive heart failure. You hear about somebody who's had a stroke, somebody who's got very serious diabetes. And they'll say, I can't do this. I don't feel like doing this. You don't realize how sick I am. What do you do in those situations?
Well, you're getting back to change, and let's not pretend change is really difficult. If you've lived a lifetime of habits, what's happened is you've slid into the things that feel most comfortable and that you get the most reward of. I'll tell you the toughest thing that I've had trouble changing, and I haven't succeeded yet, is stopping Diet Coke. Diet Coke is really bad for the bacteria in your gut, and we now know that the bacteria in your gut affect the health of your brain. I'm having enormous trouble stopping Diet Coke. It's crazy. I mean, it should be just don't buy it. But I go in the market and I pick up a six-pack. Now, I've cut way back. I used to drink 5 cans a day. I'm down to 1. So for people who are having trouble with change, I would recommend a magnificent book called Atomic Habits, A-T-O-M-I-C, Atomic Habits. Gosh, I blocked on the name of the author. The name that comes to mind is James Clear. I'm not sure if that's correct, but get that book, read the book, and put it into practice. And it will make change much easier. And basically, the book is based on the premise that if you want to be successful at change, don't try to change everything at one time. Don't try to make monstrous changes in your life. Just make very, very tiny changes and just start building on that foundation.
Mm. We've only got 10 minutes left with Dr. Yulian. It always goes by so fast, and I really want to touch on this for many reasons before we run out of time, and that is weight loss. We've talked about weight loss before, and every year the number one New Year's resolution is weight loss, and the number one failed New Year's resolution is weight loss. Dr. Yulian has written books on this, and over the years, we've seen the development of gastric bypasses and gastric sleeves and things of that nature. And now there are drugs that allegedly can help you with this. Where are we with weight loss? And is it still what it always has been? Movement, eat better, exercise.
Well, I am a fan of that approach. And let me just tell you that since I cut back, I haven't stopped yet, my Diet Coke from 5 cans a day to 1 a day, I have lost 5 pounds. Now, I've also stopped eating junk food. I've stopped eating crap. I've stopped eating until I'm stuffed. This has been painful for me. I love to eat until I'm stuffed. I love to eat crap. I love ice cream. And it's been very difficult to give up. So I read, and James Clear was the author. I just checked that. I read James Clear's book, and he said, stop trying to change everything at one time. Make tiny changes. And I've been doing that, and I have lost. Actually, if you look at yesterday's weight, I've lost 7 pounds in the last few months. Now, that's hard to do at the age of 87. It's a lot harder to do because your metabolism is slower. But just moving more and eating healthier has made a huge difference in my weight, not just my brain.
You know, it's interesting. I have never in my mind ever thought really about weight loss that I can think of. Now, I've always thought about eating better because I think that's important, and I try to do that. But this past year, simply based on headaches I was getting, I cut out processed foods, hot dogs, bologna, sausage, anything like that, which, you know, I always knew was not good for me, but you like it. There are no carbohydrates in it. And you figure, well, you know, I can slip by with that. And I lost weight when I cut that stuff out.
Yep. Duh.
Yeah, well, I know. You think I would have caught on to that, but...
Oh, my. Everybody... Hey, listen. We're all the same. We're all looking for an easy way out. We're all looking for that dopamine rush. That's what happens when you put something in that's really sweet and sugary or got that spice and fat and your brain puts out dopamine. It says, didn't that feel good? And it's a drug that feels like a reward. It's a natural drug in your brain. And you've got to look for different ways to get a dopamine high. You know how I get it now? I go to the gym. I hate the gym. I can't stand lifting weights. But I got to tell you, when I get done with it, I just feel so good afterward. And it lasts. It lasts for hours. So, so does eliminating the nitrates that were in those foods, the chemicals that were in those foods. You may miss the food initially, but if you stick with the program, you will feel better over a longer term. And hey, you may lose weight.
You may lose weight. When it comes to weight loss, the buzzword we've been hearing for at least the last few months, I think since November, is Ozempic. And this is going to solve all your problems. Well, how do you feel about Ozempic?
Well, I think these drugs may have some real value in selected patients, people who, particularly those who have diabetes, type 2 diabetes. I am just concerned that they are, the evidence shows that most people, not all people, most people who go on these drugs to lose weight regain the weight as soon as they stop. And the reason is that all they have done with these drugs is suppress the reward system in their brain. They haven't changed the reward system. They've just suppressed it. So the minute they stop taking the drug, the dopamine rush comes back when they feed themselves. And they feed themselves because that rush feels good and they gain the weight back. The recent studies show there's a small group of people, 5% maybe, 10%, who don't gain the weight back. But if you start taking those drugs and you don't change your atomic fundamental habits in a healthful direction, you're going to gain the weight back and you're going to make the pharmaceutical companies even richer. I'm disgusted by the constant barrage of pharmaceutical advertising on the air promising everyone an easy way out. It's not true.
Dr. Yulin, we've got about 3 minutes left here and an online question from one of our listeners out there who's listening right now. Patricia, thank you for the question. Ask the doctor if coffee is better than Diet Coke or regular Coke.
The answer is unquestionably yes. Now, coffee has gotten a bad rap because of the caffeine in it. And the caffeine is a stimulant drug. It's a natural drug. However, coffee beans contain some antioxidants that have been demonstrated as very good for health. So I drink a cup of coffee every morning. I kind of, what I have found is that it makes sense to buy good coffee. Good coffee has so much more flavor to offer than bad coffee. It just tastes better. And I think that there's some evidence to suggest that fresh ground coffee beans are a richer source of some of the flavonoids and antioxidants and anti-inflammatory chemicals. So if I had to choose, yes, I would choose coffee any day over Diet Coke. The artificial sweetener in Diet Coke poisons the gastric biome. It is actually a poison, which is why I'm struggling so hard to get Diet Coke out of my life. I would also tell people, you can drink too much coffee. You get too much caffeine in, and you get jazzed up, and that's not good for you either.
Mm. Dr. Art Yulin, it is always one of my favorite times when you come on, because I think we learn something. I think it's important things that we learn. I think the audience feels that way. I have always felt that way. And thank you for getting up very, very early out there on the West Coast to have this conversation. And I hope we have more of them, because I really think, not that health hasn't always been a big issue, but I really think people are paying attention and need a little direction in their life.
Well, thank you for having me, Scott. This was a wonderful start to what's going to be a terrific day. I really appreciate your interest in health. Thank you.
Thank you, Dr. Yulin. Dr. Art Yulin, one of the best. Well, hey, what a day we've had today. Great author and a great doctor. Doesn't get any better than that. We've got a whole lot to talk about tomorrow morning, so you'll have to come back with us tomorrow morning starting at 8:15 a.m. All right, for this day, make it a great Monday. This is Scott Spears heading for the dugout.
You're listening to the place for the best guests and talk. From Joey Diori at WGN's Bozo the Clown.
Before we wrap up, I'll ask, and you can or can't, can you do something in the Bozo voice for those people?
You know, the funny thing is, and as I mentioned before, my voice and Bozo's